Welcome to Denim Wrapped Nightmares, Tipsy Exchange Podcast, where we explore the Supernatural series episode by episode.
Over drinks, we'll discuss the lore, the gore, and what we adore about the Winchesters and their adventures.
I'm Burley, and I'm a new fan of the series.
I'm LA, and I'm here along for the ride. Now let's get tipsy.
Hello, LA.
Hello, Burley.
I don't know how I'm feeling right now about this premiere.
I mean, it's just the first episode.
It's just the first of hopefully many better ones.
Exactly.
Before we get into that, we have a new review. This one comes from Brittany Kaj. Guessing that's how you pronounce it. Brittany K-A-J. And she gave us, or they gave us, 5 stars. Titled, Love This Podcast. Listening to these wonderful women makes it feel as if I am watching Supernatural right along with my own sisters. With the funny and inappropriate commentary, they keep even the serious moments of the show engaging, and I always wonder what they might say next. I rock my youngest to sleep at night, and I have listened to every season at least 6 times now. Wow. Because both Burley and LA have an amazing attitude, and the commentary and insights about the show between the both of them makes the hours of rocking manageable.
Oh, congrats on the new baby.
I know. I highly recommend listening to this podcast, whether you are a first-time watcher of Supernatural or a seasoned fan. I can't wait for the future seasons and am delighted when I get the notification of a new episode. Thank you, Burley and LA, for dedicating your time and effort into the Supernatural fandom. I truly appreciate it.
Aww. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brittany.
That was lovely. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that we're helping a new mom. I mean, she may have other kids, but
look at us doing stuff.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of dedicating our time and effort into Supernatural, LA has the pleasure of recapping where we were last season. And she's so looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Season 5. Immediately after Sam frees Lucifer from hell, he and Dean become targets of both heaven and hell. They are threats because they are destined to be the respective vessels of Lucifer and the Archangel Michael, who will fight in a destined match to determine Earth's future. If Dean refuses Michael, Lucifer will destroy the human race with the 4 horsemen, the living embodiments of the 4 plagues. However, Sam saying yes to Lucifer will only speed up the devil's plans. Additionally, Bobby is crippled and in wheelchair bound. Faced with no other choice, Sam and Dean team up with Castiel to look for a means to defeat both heaven and hell whilst battling angels, demons, and even archangels. I should just stop it there. Sums it up. Their journey pushes the Winchesters' relationships to the breaking point as they both learn how they truly feel about each other and at points agree with Michael and Lucifer. Both from distrust in each other and from not seeing any other choice, the boys' journey also leads to the deaths of many of their dear friends, such as Ellen and Joe, while other old friends, such as Anna, side against them, and the 4 horsemen continuing to bring hell to earth as the brothers seem to think all hope is lost, even after some personal encounters with Lucifer and Michael themselves. Meanwhile, Castiel begins a mission to find God, even going as far as to face the Archangel Raphael to find him, only to deduce from the angel Joshua, the angel who talks to God, that God won't help. Mm-mm. He's out.
Not his problem.
Additionally, the brothers try to kill Lucifer with the cult, who regain it from a powerful crossroads demon named Crowley, who is also the king of the crossroads and wants the boys to kill Lucifer, but they don't succeed. The boys eventually gain hope from the trickster, who is actually the Archangel Gabriel, and who also, after regaining his faith in humanity, tells Sam and Dean that the rings of the 4 horsemen are the keys to Lucifer's cage and that the brothers can trap Lucifer. So Sam, Dean, Castiel, Bobby, and Crowley, who thankfully restores Bobby's legs, all go after the rings, and after gaining them, Sam willingly decides to let Lucifer That's not right. Possess him so he can take back control, open the cage, and fall in. In the season finale, their plan falters and Lucifer fully possesses Sam while Michael meets him on the battlefield. As the brothers talk, Lucifer tries to convince Michael to have them both walk off the chessboard.
Yeah. Yeah. Like then, all of a sudden, then he was like, let's not fight. We don't want to hurt each other.
Yep. But Michael won't listen and decides to have an altercation with Lucifer.
Dina should have been like, you killed our other brother.
Yeah, definitely.
You deserve it. I threw you off.
No, I just lost where I am.
You're in my house.
That's an altercation with Lucifer.
Yeah. Last you said that Lucifer was a total jackass because he had no problem killing one brother, but then didn't want to kill the other brother. But
So Dean, after finding the battlefield with the help from Chuck, the prophet.
Battlefield.
Rides onto the field with the Impala in a desperate attempt to get through to Sam. But Lucifer instead beats Dean to a pulp and he explodes Castiel and snaps Bobby's neck. But in the end, the Winchester's love proves more powerful than Lucifer's rage. And Sam retakes control, opens the cage door and falls in, bringing Lucifer, Michael and Adam all with him.
Didn't Dean say at some point in the show, like, what do you want me to try and defeat them with the power of love?
Did he?
I think he did.
Oh.
And he actually, that's what actually ended up happening.
I don't remember that.
I could be making it up.
No, I believe you.
But I feel like that's something that was said.
Huh. Interesting. A resurrected Castiel, who is now more powerful than before, then heals Dean, brings back Bobby, and the trio part their separate ways. Castiel returns to heaven to possibly try and rule it. And Bobby resumes hunting Dean on Sam's insistence. Goes to Lisa and retires from killing monsters and begins a new normal life away from hunting in the suburbs. But that same night that he goes to Lisa's, we see that there is a Sam standing outside of the house watching them. And that's that.
Well, today's episode is called Exile on Main Street. It's the season premiere for season 6 and originally aired on September 24th, 2010. The episode picks up 1 year after the events that LA just described. Apparently, whenever Dean showed up at Lisa's door, she was just like, oh my God, move in.
Get in here.
Just get right in here.
No questions asked.
He was drinking too much and having nightmares and screaming in his sleep. And Lisa was just like, what red flags?
I'll take them all.
You don't just get a drawer. You move into my house. You're going to live here. Be my child's father figure.
Right. No job.
I will be your father.
How's he going to contribute?
Yeah. She was just like, well, no, come on. You just ended the apocalypse that I have no proof of knowing ever actually happened, but you just saved the world. Mm. Get right in here.
Yeah.
Come on.
It seems safe and logical.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Right away. And we know this because, again, it picks up 1 year after. And then we find out, like, all these other people are like, oh, yeah, a year ago. You've been living with her for a year. You've been building this life for a year. We were like, wait a minute. Like, he literally, okay. So like, she was like, move right in.
Yeah. He's working in construction, driving an old truck, being a little stepdaddy.
He's got this nerdy friend named Sid. He had on a Nirvana shirt, and LA said, I don't think Sid has ever listened to Nirvana.
Never. Not once.
He moved right in and just went right into suburban life. And I feel like the house looked like it was a different house again.
I didn't pay attention. When you said that, I didn't pay attention enough to like notice if it was different.
Like, I'm trying to think of what the door looked like whenever, at the end of season 5, when Dean showed up at Lisa's doorstep originally to be like, hey, like, I'm about to go do something. I know you haven't heard from me. I haven't called you. I haven't talked to you. But I knew where you moved to. You moved into this new house. I feel like that house was not this house. So I think they moved again. So maybe he showed up on our doorstep and she was like, we're moving.
Yeah.
We got to move somewhere else.
You're coming in. We need more room.
We need more lawn. We need more garage space. Come on, Ben. And Ben's like lost all that personality that he had back in season 3. What happened?
What a dud.
I mean, I know I was complaining back in season 3 that I was like, 8-year-olds don't act like that. But holy shit.
Diligent little boy.
I wouldn't have minded having the personality still. I mean, it was gone.
What happened? It is gone, yes.
Anyway, so yeah, typical suburban life.
But he still sleeps with a gun and holy water under his bed.
Yes, and there
so
was
it's
like
not
a,
all gone.
Yes. Not all gone. He still knows there's things out there. I wasn't too big of a fan of the montage at the beginning. I appreciated that they did the different coloring so that we would know what was present and what was past. Like they did past. It was a montage of Dean living his suburban life, but cut in, we would see things like as a construction worker, he'd be using a table saw and it would cut to him using that table saw in, I think it was Bloodlust when he chopped off that vampire's head. Mm-hmm. And so that would be black and white. Like the old stuff would be, it was just a little choppy for me. They've done some beautiful montages in episodes previously. This one was a little choppy.
It was, but I kind of liked it that like these things that he's doing in this life now are still like probably in the back of his head while he's doing it, you know, like mm-hmm. from his old life. I liked what they were getting at, I guess.
Yeah, I appreciated the story they were telling because I agree with you that the black and white was like memories that were maybe back of mind, mm-hmm. you know, it was just a little choppy to me. Who am I? Some like esteemed critic over here with my Tito's vodka. They caught us up very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, they did. I mean, yeah.
I didn't like that they caught us up very quickly on Dean, but I still did not get any. And this is something that I'm realizing I am like one of the only people who has this issue. I'm still getting absolutely no vibes as to what his relationship is with Lisa.
Yeah, yeah.
She's just kind of there.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
You know, even that montage, she was hardly in it.
Even this episode, she's hardly in it. Mm-hmm. Like and even when she is, it's not like there's much going on there.
Yeah, she's just there.
Yeah.
So I'm a little disappointed in that. I was hoping that she was going to get developed a little further.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, my hopes are kind of like,
yeah,
dwindling.
Listen, it's not about her.
Trust me. Anywho, enough of that.
Enough of suburbia.
Right? Well, no, not quite.
Well, true.
We're not quite done yet.
For now.
Speaking of Dean's best friend, Sid. So they're out at a bar and they're chit-chatting and Sid is trying to get Dean to be vulnerable and tell him more about his past. And Dean kind of does. He kind of speaks in code about how he lived on the road and he worked with a partner. They did jobs that other people wouldn't do. He called it pest control.
I liked it. Clever.
I thought it was very clever as well. Sid is trying to get him to divulge a little bit more. And I'll be honest, I thought Sid was going to be the bad guy.
You did, yeah.
He just kept trying to get Dean to talk more. And he just kind of kept popping up.
Right.
You know?
Like, I saw where you're coming from with it, for sure.
Right. I totally thought he was going to be the bad guy, but he's not. He's just a douchebag. Whenever they are closing out their tab after having this weird catch-up session where they're not really catching up about anything, one of the waitresses comes over and lays down the check.
She's got a lot of tattoos on her arm.
Yes. And she like, those tattoos are important. Mm-hmm. The tattoos are on her arm. And she, like, rubs her hand up Dean's forearm.
I was after like, oh. She says,
yeah.
Okay.
Did you ever do that whenever you were a server
in
L.A.?
No. Hell no. I wish I had. There were some times I wish I had, but no.
To be so bold.
Yeah.
Sid makes the comment of, I swear, like, you always get the girls. And Dean says, I swear, like, once you're unavailable, please.
Oh, my God.
Come on. We saw the first 5 seasons. You had no problem.
Yeah, you weren't lacking any action.
Yeah. And she's also written her name and phone number on the check.
Of course.
Which Dean then tears up. I was like, did he pay? What happened?
That's true.
He just tears it up and they just cut to them leaving the restaurant after that, leaving the bar and pub. So Sid and Dean apparently work together because they're both like, see you tomorrow. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye. Sid goes his separate way. Dean goes to his new pickup truck. Not Impala, a pickup mm-hmm. truck.
An old one.
Mm-hmm. Well, older.
Oh, well, yeah, yeah.
It was in pretty good shape.
Yeah, oh, I like older trucks.
Yeah, I don't know anything about trucks or cars. But I thought it was cute. Had, like, the big toolbox thing that some trucks have, like, right underneath the peekaboo window.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
As he's getting in his truck, we hear a scream in the distance. Ah! So Dean is like, oh, shit. Something's going down. And I think that maybe there was a moment of not my business,
mm-hmm.
but nope, that wouldn't be our boy.
Nope.
So he gets his gun out, hides it in his corduroy collared khaki
yeah.
jacket, sticks it in that. His hair, by the way, he's looking more like Dean Smith from It's a Terrible Life with the way he's styling his hair. in this episode. He just looks like a dad, you know?
Shirt, button up shirt tucked in with a belt.
Yeah, I liked that, though.
Oh, you did, yeah.
Gave us some views, some things that are normally hidden by an untucked shirt.
It's true.
I know it. So he gets his flashlight and he goes across the street to what we find out is a hotel renovation site. So he's walking around in there and there's some like Wolverine claw marks and he's hearing footsteps. And then there's a big bloody smeared handprint on the wall. And he's just like, oh, fuck, there's a pigeon in here.
I know exactly what this is.
Something's going down. So he goes back to his house and he's Googling away. And then he calls the cops and he's like, is there a missing person? Hotel renovation. I have a hunch. I used to be a cop. And then Lisa comes in and he's just like, yeah, okay, I'll talk to you later. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye. And he hangs up and immediately lies to her. He was on the phone with Sid. They were setting up a poker game for next weekend. I feel like she knew he was lying to her.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just the way she was making a face. She's like, it's 11:30 at night. And he's like, oh, that's probably why he was asleep when I called. Duh, silly me. I'm kind of mad at her for not calling him on it.
Right. She's just like, okay. Let's go to bed.
You loved her pajamas.
No, I did not. I said, is that what you're supposed to wear after you get married?
And then I said, well, they did move in together right away. They must be on like the speedy timeline. So they're already out of the honeymoon phase. Yeah,
she's not even trying. She's just like, comfort is key. And it's like an old lady nightgown time.
Hey, she is gorgeous. She is gorgeous. I will give her
that.
Oh,
yes.
But yeah, I'm mad at her still. Like, I totally feel like she knew he was lying to her and she didn't call him on it.
She did.
Like, come on. It's been a year and you're still walking on eggshells around him? And then later on in the episode, she goes, it was the happiest year of my life. And I'm just like, Lisa, no. Whoa.
She must have been real lonely.
Right? Oh, man. I feel real bad for Lisa. From what little we saw for this episode, I feel real bad for Lisa. So anyways, Dean's thinking something shady's going on. But, you know, he closes the laptop. Whoever that cop was that he was talking to on the other line just must have been like, okay, that was weird. And just like called it a day. But he was suddenly like, yeah, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye. Thanks up. Goes to bed. The next day, he's going into work and he starts seeing like the same Wolverine claw marks. Like on a, it was on a pole and they saw it on a house. And he walks through, he jumps out and he goes to investigate and he sees it like on a sheet that's hanging out to dry. He's just like, what the fuck? And then he follows it over to a shed where there's marks on there. And he gets his gun out because he's carrying that on him now. And he's just like, oh, yeah, okay. And he kicks open the door and there's a Yorkie just sitting in there. And the Yorkie runs out. And I immediately looked at LA and went, who locked that Yorkie in there?
Yeah, that's the real problem.
It's never addressed. We never get an explanation as to who felt the need to lock a Yorkie in a shed.
Not cool.
Not cool. Well, after the Yorkie runs out, Sid just happens to be right there.
That's when you were like, oh, it's him.
Yeah,
it's
that's Sid. When I was like, he's the monster. It's him. He's doing it.
Which as soon as he said it, I was like, oh, shit, she might be right.
I totally was like, he said, he's the monster. He's doing it. He knows that Dean is a hunter, something. He's trying to, like, there's too much weird stuff going on around this Sid guy. It's him. It was not Sid.
Wasn't he like, do you have a gun?
Yeah. And then Dean said, I thought the Yorkie was a possum.
Yeah. Because naturally that's how you take out a possum.
Right? Well, Sid is just like, okay, weirdo, and jogs off. And we find out later, Sid immediately goes and tells everyone. Like, hey, guys.
Town gossip? Or Dean, the neighborhood, the
he's
block?
He's the neighbor gossip. He immediately was just like, hey, Lisa, your hubby just chased a Yorkie into a shed, which he didn't do, and then tried to shoot the Yorkie with a gun. He, like, things are weird. Things are going on.
What are you going to do about this weirdo?
It's freaking crazy. And Lisa was like, I'm going to go to a movie in the Cheesecake Factory, but we'll get to there. We're not there yet. Dean is still at the shed. That's where we are.
We're getting a little ahead.
Yeah. So the Yorkies run away. Sid's run off to go tell everyone about the Yorkie incident. And Dean looks down and is like, oh, fuck. Sulfur. I already am kind of going, okay, so there's claw marks. And it's a demon doing it. Like, well, okay, this is weird because we know sulfur is demon, right?
Right.
Right. So Dean is just like, oh, shit. I got to get to baby. So he runs home.
I got a job to do.
Mm-hmm. Something needs hunting. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, gone into this garage where baby is tarped, which already I was like, oh.
Poor thing.
I don't like it.
Just being neglected.
So he pulls back the tarp, throws open the trunk, starts throwing things into a bag. And he's just throwing all kinds of things. Because again, claw marks, sulfur, who knows? Who knows what's happening? And that's when Lisa pops up in the door and is just like, hey. So everyone in the neighborhood is talking about you chasing a Yorkie with a gun. What is going on? And Dean's just like, nothing. Oh, first when she pops in, is like, hey, he immediately like stopped in the trunk and went and was like, oh, hammer. This is what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Like real nonchalant, right? Not at all shady. And even now, she still doesn't call him out on it. Like she kind of does. She kind of is like, are you sure? Are you sure something else not's going on? And he kind of lets her know, okay, I'm feeling a little paranoid. I think something's going on. And she's like, are you hunting something? And he says, no, I'm not. I was just overreacting.
Which if this is like one of the only women he's actually like been honest with about what he did, you would think he would be fine divulging this stuff to her.
I get it to an extent that he doesn't want to freak her out.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't want her to be scared and think
there's zero trust here.
But it just is very shallow. The relationship seems shallow.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm supposed to care about them, but I just don't.
Mm-mm. No, I'm like not upset.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen for them.
So he tells Lisa, you know what? Why don't you take Ben, go to a movie, go kill some time at the Cheesecake Factory. Let me do a full sweep of the house. Just make sure that there's nothing here. And I'll feel better about it. I'll have some peace of mind. And Lisa just goes, okay, and leaves.
Well, no wonder he liked her so much. She just did whatever he told her to do.
Asks no questions. Even whenever it's clear that he's fucking lying, doesn't even call him on it. Boo. So he's doing this. Packing up the bag again. Figuring out what he's going to do to sweep the house. Sweep the whole fucking neighborhood. Because we know that's what Dean's going to do. And then the light starts flickering. And that's when I looked at LA and I went, what the fuck? Okay, so we've got the light flickering. We've got the sulfur. We've got the claws. We've got the bloody handprint. We've got the pigeon. What is it?
Which, by the way.
What are we hunting here?
By the way, I don't even think clearly we know he lied to her, but it's like he went in that trunk and got out his old jacket and daddy's journal. Like, was he just going to take off and just like be like, okay, go have fun at Cheesecake Factory. I'm taking off hunting.
I don't know if he was even going to tell her nothing. Because she had to come seek him out. And the only reason she knew anything was up is because of Sid and his big mouth.
I know, but I'm saying, like, after she left is when he went and got the trunk.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, so he was just like,
was he gonna leave?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I don't know. Maybe.
Anyway, light flickers.
Light flickers. We're going, what the fuck is he hunting? And then he turns around and fucking Azazel is there. And we were just like, oh my God. What's Yellow Eyes doing?
Yeah.
And Yellow Eyes is just like, oh, so God, you know, Chuck brought back Cass, new and improved. Why wouldn't he bring me back too? And I was like, that doesn't track.
Not really.
What is happening? And Azazel is just taunting him and getting all up in his face. And we are just freaking out. And then all of a sudden, Sam shows up out of nowhere with a giant syringe full of what looks like milk of magnesia. Swipes through Azazel. Like Azazel disappears as Sam's hand comes down and he like Pulp Fiction pierces Dean right in the chest with the milk of magnesia and then it cuts to black.
Yep.
We were both like, what the fuck just happened?
So confused.
But Dean, he was fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
And we find out that he had been touched by a djinn. And was essentially in the midst of overdosing and dying. That's why he was like choking and like, blah, 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 blah. It's not because Azazel was actually choking him. He had been hallucinating all of this stuff the whole time, except for the Yorkie.
No, yeah.
Because Sid also saw the Yorkie.
True.
So the Yorkie was real, which means someone still stuck that Yorkie in that shed.
Yeah, that's the problem in the neighborhood.
That's the mystery. Dean wakes up and he's in this abandoned house somewhere and Sam is just sitting there staring at him. And it is a weird fucking reunion.
Yeah, Sam is just like cool, calm, collected. No big deal.
Nothing. Even whenever Dean came over and hugged him.
Yeah, it was like Sam was like, okay.
Yeah, the facial expression he made. LA yet again was like, not my Sammy.
No, I didn't like it.
So Sam tells Dean that literally He was in the cage for maybe a day, and then he woke up sweaty and wet in the cemetery, in Stoll Cemetery, and he has no idea how he got out. It's a mystery. And then he said, I've been looking. Trust me, I've been looking. I searched for weeks. And Dean is like, wait a minute. What did you just say to me? And Sam says, yeah, I've been back for roughly a year. Dean is not happy. He's pissed.
I wouldn't be happy either.
And Sam tries to tell him, you know, you had this great life and I didn't want to come and ruin it. And Dean's just like, I wanted my fucking brother.
Alive.
Alive, yeah. And that's whenever I kind of also was like, damn, like, I feel really bad for Lisa right now. Like, no wonder it seems so shallow. You're both just going through the motions.
Yeah.
You're both just filler. Yeah, playing house, you know, just playing house together. That's so sad.
Wasting each other's time.
Mm-hmm. Sam goes on to explain to Dean that it was the gin and the poisoning and all that other kind of stuff that I already touched on. And he says that they had actually come for him. I think he said the week before or a couple of weeks before. So that's how they knew that they were probably going to be coming for Dean. And so he'd been keeping an eye on him. Dean asks Sam, you know, what have you been doing? And Sam's like, well, I've been hunting. And Dean's like, alone? And he's like, no, like I have some people I've been hunting with. Dean says, you with strangers? And Sam goes, well, they're more like family. So he walks them out and introduces them to three cousins. They're all Campbells, Gwen, Christian, and Mark. And immediately we had flags going up. Like, wait a minute. Like, Ruby told us a long time ago, like, all the Campbells are dead. So who the fuck are these three people? And luckily, we weren't the only ones who thought that. Dean was also very much like, wait a minute. I thought they were all gone.
Yeah.
It's not answered. Dean's just ignored. It's not addressed. No acknowledgement of that whatsoever. They're just like, no, like, these are your cousins. That's Mark. He's such and such something removed. Like,
yeah. Family reunion.
Yeah. Apparently not. Apparently not. Everybody's gone. And I was just like, hey, shady. And just when I thought it couldn't get shadier, all of a sudden, Samuel Campbell, Grandpa Campbell, comes walking out and is like, hey. Sam's not the only one who got resurrected.
So weird.
It was so weird. And they're just like, we just figure whatever pulled Sam up also pulled me down. So I guess Samuel Campbell was in heaven. And they just happened to find each other. Just bump into each other at the coffee shop the next morning. Like, oh my God, you got resurrected too? That's crazy. And I was trying to think, I was like, Sam never even met Samuel Campbell. So how did they even know who each other was?
Right. And then again, who are these cousins?
Who are these cousins? Yeah. That are suddenly just, what? Surprise.
None of it's right.
None of it's right. It's all very shady. And I love that you and I were both like, no, something's wrong. Something's wrong. And Dean was like, something's wrong here. I don't remember exactly what he said. Oh, am I the only one who feels like something's not adding up here? And you and I were both screaming at the TV. No. We agree with you, Dean. This is all shady as hell.
Yeah.
But everybody just goes with it. We're just going to move past it. Because we got to go get these gin. These gin be acting up.
Mm-hmm.
Dean's like, well, what did you inject me with? And, well, Samuel has a cure.
Convenient.
Grandpa Samuel has a cure. And Samuel was like, I got tricks. I be showing you things your daddy never knew. He said something sassy. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, okay. So we don't get, you took all my fucking angels away, you shithead writers. I'm sorry, but no, I'm not at the same time. You took my angels away. You took my Uriel. You took my Zachariah. You took my Anna. Cass wasn't in this episode.
Yeah.
And I mean, Cass and Crowley can only dish so much sass. Where else am I going to get my sass from? And I'm like, I guess it's going to be Grandpa Campbell. He's going to become Mr. Sass.
Yeah.
So they're just like, all right, we got to get these gin. And Dean says, well, what's the plan? And they're like, we're trying to get shit together. And Dean's like, okay, so there is no plan. Oh, no, I'm jumping ahead of myself.
Zay, do you want to touch on how they said that, like, they're poisoned by touch?
Oh, well, I thought we touched on that already. Go ahead.
Did we?
We might have, but you do it.
Oh, okay.
So I can get a drink.
I was just going to say, they also explained that, because I think Dean asked how he would have been poisoned, and they said it's through touch.
Because
I was totally thinking it was, like, a drink or something. Somebody, like, roofied him.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, they said it was through touch.
Were you thinking it was Sid that roofied him?
I was.
So you were, yeah.
Especially after you said that.
I know. He just seemed like the bad guy. Hang on, let me get another drink.
Okay, I was also getting ahead of myself. So as it's explained to Dean, the touch thing, they also say, we think these djinn are trying to get revenge because we ganked a djinn a while back. It was all the way back in season two. We ganked a djinn. And Dean immediately is like, so they know where I live. Like, there's a chance they know where I live. Like, we need to get home. We need to get home right now. So he's freaking out that they need to go check on Lisa and Ben. And Samuel just says, don't worry about it. I've got a guy watching the house. And Dean is just like, no, fuck you. Get me home right now. So Sam throws Dean in his fancy new car and they race straight to the house. The guy out that was watching the house, it shows him in the car. His eyes are white and he's just like, dead. Gone. He's yeah. gone. And the front door is wide open and everything's dark. Like, not even a porch light is on. So they're running in there. Dean is freaking out, yelling for Lisa and Ben. No answer. And Sam is just like, ooh, sorry, bro. I don't know what to tell you.
Whoops.
Whoopsie. And then, thankfully, Lisa and Ben come in the back. They had gone to the movie and to kill some time at the Cheesecake Factory like he told them to.
Dutifully so.
Right.
They did their duty.
So Dean is hugging them and just like, oh, my God, thank you. Thank you so much. And then he's like, go pack a bag. You can't stay here. Go pack a bag. And Lisa's just like, what's going on? And he's like, none of your business. Go pack a bag. And so she tells Ben, okay, honey, like, yeah, you go upstairs and go pack a bag. I'll be up there in a second. Ben turns around to go upstairs, and then he sees Sam, and it's just like, there's an extremely tall and sexy man in the kitchen. I don't know what to do.
And then I wouldn't either.
Lisa looks at him. I would know what to do.
No, I'm just kidding.
Totally. I would know what to do.
Totally kidding.
Lisa turns and looks over, and it's just like, oh, Sam. Oh, my goodness. Sam's just like, hey, guys.
Hey, Lisa.
I know what Dean said, that I'm in a cage in hell, but I'm not. I'm here. Good to see you.
Man, if I was Lisa, I would have been like, how many fucking lies are you going to tell me? Your brother's alive now.
I totally expected. Well, it's Lisa. So, of course, she's going to go.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you need to move in?
Yeah.
Sam, are we moving? We need to go get another house with another room. Sam, you're moving in, right?
Clearly.
Got to collect these Winchesters.
I know.
All right. So we get Lisa and Ben packed up. Dean's like, I'm going to take you somewhere safe. I'm going to take you to a friend's house. And he takes them to Bobby's. When Bobby answers the door, Dean introduces them. And Bobby says, well, it's nice to finally meet you two. And LA and I immediately are like, what the fuck?
Real nice, Dean.
It's been a year.
Yeah.
And you didn't introduce your quasi-wife and child to your quasi-father. Kind of fucked up.
I'd be like, oh, you only come around when you need something? Need help with something?
Right. Like, I understand that you're leaving the hunting life behind, but somebody who practically helped raise you, you're going right. to leave, you're gonna ditch them too?
They're practically family.
Rude.
Yeah.
Bobby Singer once said, family don't end in blood.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't like that. Didn't like that. Bobby welcomes them into his home. He tells them, don't fucking touch anything. Okay? Assume everything is loaded. I don't have a TV for you, but there's Reader's Digest. Now get upstairs. Get.
Every kid's dream. Mm-hmm. No TV and a Reader's Digest.
Can't touch shit, but get out of here. So Lisa and Ben go upstairs, disappear from the story yet again. We know they're there, but that's it. Sam shows up in the doorway and LA was like, oh shit. Cause we're thinking like there's going to be like this huge reunion thing. Like we're going to get the moment now. Still no moment. Bobby's just like, hey, Turns out Bobby's known for a year as well. And so we have the big dramatic fight scene, or we had the dramatic scene with Dean and Sam, right? Like it was very soap opera dramatic with the pacing and the dramatic turning around and like, oh, hand on hair, inner turmoil. I'm upset. Fight. And then this was more like, I'm frustrated. I'm angry kind of fight, right? Like a lot of yelling. But the whole thing is that like you got out, Dean.
Right.
You were living a suburban life. You were just going through the motions. And like, we don't know if you were actually happy or not, but you got out and you weren't being attacked by monsters every week. So we wanted to just leave you to that. Sorry. But not sorry. I think Bobby even said, I'd do it again.
Right.
You know?
Dean's like, nah, bros.
Dean's not happy.
I was like, I would have been like, the FOMO right now is real. How dare you leave me out of everything?
Well, not just leaving him out, but making that decision for him.
Right, exactly.
You know, like they withheld information and give him the opportunity to make that decision for himself, you know? It's kind of messed up.
Well, but then Sam's like, you promised you'd leave it alone. Dean's like, of course I didn't leave it alone.
Right? I'm sorry. Excuse me. I didn't hold up my end of the bargain to just leave you rotting in hell.
Right.
Excuse me, bro. And you didn't come and let me know, hey, by the way, I'm going to leave. You're not coming back. Like, I'm going to have my own life and you're going to have your own life because we've done this before. Like, that's going to happen. But just so you know, I'm not rotting away in hell. Like, yeah. I would be livid just like Dean is.
Right. Well, like he said, I wanted my brother alive.
Right.
Like, he didn't even say, I needed you with me. I just wanted to know you were alive. So for a whole year, sitting there thinking his brother's dead, but he was really alive.
And we haven't seen a single puppy eye from Sam this
Not
whole time.
Not one.
Not one.
Not a one.
Nothing. Could not give
like,
a
no
shit.
Like, no remorse for, like, it doesn't feel bad for lying to,
Nothing.
To Dean? Nothing.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Not a thing.
Yeah.
What is happening? It's just very weird. It's very weird.
Sam was just, like, very stoic. Feel like throughout this whole episode about everything. Like,
every
just
single
blasé,
thing.
Like meh.
Yeah. Sam is very much what I imagine Dean has been for the past year.
Mm-hmm. With Lisa.
And his best friend Sid.
Yeah. Good old Sid.
Just kind of there. Ugh. So we have this family meeting fight. And then Lisa comes downstairs and is like, hey, how's it going? And Dean's like, we're breaking up. And Lisa's like, ugh. That sucks because this playing house thing has been the best year of my life. I thought you were going to be like a dad to my child. I am not happy right now. And Dean's just like, well, don't know what to tell you. Monsters be monsters.
Got to go back to that life.
They're coming. I don't want to put you guys in danger. And that's it. Like, again, I feel like I was supposed to feel something during this conversation and I just didn't.
Not at all.
Now we have Sam, Dean, Grandpa, and the cousins talking about, okay, what are we going to do with these gen? And that's when Dean tosses out, hey, why don't we use me as bait? We know they're watching the house. We know that they want to come and get me. They want to come and get Sam. Like, why don't we use us as bait? And I love the whole way that he did it because one of the cousins tried to be all like, we're professionals. Like, let us handle it. We got it.
Rude.
And then Dean came up with the plan and was like, it's almost like I'm a professional.
I love it.
Like sass.
I loved it.
Getting some sass from the hunters this season. That's fun. So they decide to move forward with the plan. They're like, okay, so Lisa and Ben are at Bobby's house. So we'll go to Lisa and Ben's house. Oh, sorry. Dean, Lisa, and Ben's house and use Dean and Sam as bait. So they're all hanging out, getting their bags, their duffel bags in order that all have the antidote in them. Like, there's several syringes just all over the place. And as they're going through the house, they're like making fun of Dean, essentially making fun of him for having a magazine and a picture of his family. And then he has golf clubs. I mean, it turns out Dean just really embraced that suburban dad lifestyle.
He was trying.
He was trying real hard. And Dean is kind of getting his feelings hurt a little bit. He's getting made fun of. So he goes to the kitchen by himself. And Samuel comes in there and is just like, hey, it's okay. Like, I get it. You remind me of your mom. She wanted a normal life too. It's cool. I understand. But I really think that you should say fuck that life and come hunt with us instead. It's in your blood. And this is what you should be doing. Dean is just like, okay, maybe. I don't know. I'm going to go outside and talk to that guy in the van. So he goes outside and there's a cousin in the van being very nonchalant, just sitting in the van, staring straight ahead. And so Dean is like, I too will be nonchalant and grabs a giant monocle. Isn't that what they're called when it's the one?
I think so.
Giant monocle to look ahead. And the cousin is like, yeah, there's three djinn hanging out in a tree. It's never explained.
So like these adult looking people are just hanging out in a tree.
Hanging out in a tree. These normally cave-dwelling, hiding people, like, we already know that these are unique djinn because they can blend in with people. They control whether or not they have tattoos, right? Like, the tattoos appear or disappear at will. which yeah. already I was like, what? Okay, they kind of already looked like people before, but okay. So these are magic gen. They can hide their tattoos and they hide in trees. And the hunter can see them. So the assumption is that anybody can see them.
Mm-hmm.
Just hanging out. And Dean's like looking through the monocle and is like, oh my gosh, they're just sitting there watching us from their tree.
Very odd choice.
It was an odd choice. Dean goes inside and says, okay, y'all have to leave because this isn't going to work. They're watching us. There's three of them. They're not going to come here and try to do anything as long as they know they're outnumbered. So get out of here. Leave me and Sam to do what me and Sam do. Samuel says, I don't like it, but you're right. So we're going to go and you call the second that those djinn make an appearance. They're just like, okay, but they don't do that. Sam and Dean are in the house. They're by themselves. The Campbell cousins and grandpa have left. They've packed up the van and drove off. And as they're having like kind of a conversation, I guess, Dean looks over and sees the djinn are in his neighbor's house because he can see directly into their house. We've seen him be able to look directly into their house a couple of times throughout the episode. And it's Sid and his wife, and they are getting fucked up by a couple of djinn. Dean immediately grabs a couple of syringes and just takes off over to the house. And Sam tries to stop him. Sam says, like, they're already dead. Just let it go. You can't help them. Dean says, no, fuck you. And he runs over there. He does not get there in time. Sid and his wife are both dead. And then all of a sudden the two djinn are, or not two, I guess one of them. Oh, yeah. No, the two djinn that are in the house, they grab Dean. And it turns out it's Bridget, the waitress
yep.
from the bar. She wasn't flirting with him. She was poisoning him.
Just touching that, rubbing that arm.
Mm-hmm. And she did have tattoos on her arm. So that let us know. And we're seeing now that the djinn are like controlling whether or not they have tattoos.
Like it grows down the arm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't like that they didn't go up onto their face.
I agree.
Because the first djinn had them all over. And these, it was just their arms.
Maybe they're babies.
Yeah, maybe they're babies. Or maybe they're just vain and they don't want tattoos on their face. Who knows? But Bridget is just like, oh, so you survived my poisoning. What about a double dose? And so she grabs his face and her tattoos are growing. And then the guy that was holding Dean back also takes one of his hands and puts it on Dean's face. And his tattoos are growing. And we see like Dean's veins are like turning green and his eyes go white. So Dean's in trouble.
Yeah.
And then the third djinn, who also decided to abandon their post in the tree, is back at Dean, Lisa, and Ben's house fighting Sam. And Sam is using golf clubs because that's what's handy there.
I mean, he does beat the hell out of the guy.
He does. And he like, I like how he just keeps checking the tattoos on the arm to like wait for the tattoos to stop moving. And then he's like, okay, we're good. They aren't moving anymore. But Dean is fucked. You know, he's hallucinating. He's seeing Azazel. He's seeing Lisa and Ben running around in the backyard talking shit about him. Like, or not shit about him, talking shit about Bobby's house.
Yeah.
I don't remember how did... Hang on.
Then he sees, like, Azazel, and it's like she's up on the wall, the ceiling.
Oh, yeah. Like, his hallucinations get real bad. He sees Ben and Azazel is feeding Ben demon blood. And Lisa is on the ceiling, just like Mary, just like Jess. All kinds of crazy hallucinations going on with poor Dean.
Isn't she saying it's all your fault?
Yeah.
It's all your fault.
I don't remember how Dean got saved. But while Dean is hallucinating, is like just completely incapacitated on the floor in Sid's house, the two djinn go over and are attacking Sam, and Samuel and the cousins, grandpa and the cousins show up. They kill the dude djinn, and then Sam, that's what it was. Sam runs over to go save Dean. And as soon as Sam is gone, grandpa and the cousins are like, don't kill her. Like, we're not going to kill you. And they like put a bag over the girl djinn, over Bridget, over her head, and like, take her. And grandpa is like, hurry up, get her in the van before they come back. So Sam doesn't know what's going on here. And I was just like, are they trafficking monsters? What is happening here? It was just weird. out of the three Jen, two got killed, but one they kidnapped.
Yeah.
And Sam is who goes and saves Dean.
Correct.
The next day, Dean is now changing his tune. He's like, okay, so I'm not going to break up with Lisa. I'm actually going to go back to Lisa and Ben because they're in danger. Now I have to be worried that other monsters are going to come. Like I put them in danger by showing up on the doorstep. So now I just, this is going to be my obligation now. I'm obligated to stay with them because, what? Right?
Whatever girl wants to hear.
Right? I was just like, fuck, man, poor Lisa. And Sam is just like, you know, I know what I was saying before, but now I really think you can't have a normal life. Sorry. I was wrong. You can't have this because you are going to keep putting them in danger if you're here. I think you should come back to hunting. And Dean is like, why would you even want me? I'm rusty. I put us in danger yesterday because I just jumped into action. And Sam's like, that's exactly why I want you. You didn't even think about it.
You don't hesitate.
You didn't hesitate. You just went because you have feelings and I don't right now for some reason.
Pretty much.
But Dean sticks to his guns. He's like, no, I put them in danger. And the best option for me right now is to stay here so I can protect them. I don't want to be here, but I have to be because I have to keep them safe. And Sam's like, all right, I guess so. And then Dean tries to do this big dramatic gesture of giving Sam the keys to baby. And Sam's just like, no, thanks.
It's like, I got my car the way I like it.
Yeah.
Which he does have a nice Mustang, black Mustang.
But it was about the gesture.
Oh, no, no, no. I know. I'm just saying.
Dean, you could tell, like, he broke Dean's heart.
Yeah.
Felt so bad for Dean. And then Sam's just like, all right, bye. I'm going to take off. And Dean just kind of was like waving.
Yeah. In his driveway.
And that was that.
That is the episode.
That is the episode. I don't know how I feel about it. We'll just have to keep trucking along and see what happens. It was written by Sarah Gamble and directed by Kitchen Meat Cute, Phil Segrisha. Gore, there wasn't any gore.
Mm-mm.
I would say the only gore happened in the choppy montage at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
Which Phil, he's an editor, so I'm surprised that wasn't a little bit more seamless.
Maybe he did it that way on purpose.
Maybe. Maybe we were supposed to feel a little disoriented and a little choppy. You're right. I bet you we were. So yeah, no gore. I can't think of any gore.
I can't either.
Was there anything you adored about this episode? Me too. Like, it wasn't a bad episode, but I'm just feeling confused right now. I have no idea what we're going into this season.
Yeah, like nobody stood out. There was nothing like special or cute.
Mm-mm. But it wasn't a bad episode.
No. Especially like coming off of the last season we just did too.
Yeah.
And then this one's just very different.
Like I won't remember this episode at all in like 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
And like I said, I'm just confused.
Mm-hmm.
We're back to like season four, where like the brothers are not on the same page and something's up with Sam.
Yeah.
That's
funny. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Just not the best opener, I guess.
I'm not excited. Yeah. I'm confused and I'm kind of like, okay, what the fuck's going on? But I'm not excited for this season. And a lot of the premiere episodes have left us feeling more excited about what's to come.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's just move on from this train wreck into lore.
All right, lore. We're going to talk about a djinn. I cut out a bunch of stuff, so hopefully it's not too
as crazy you should have. It was a lot.
Well, a djinn, often Al-Djinn or djinn, are shape-shifting spirits made of fire and air with origins in pre-Islamic Arabia. They are an inspiration and have held space in Arab culture for almost as long as Arab culture itself. And yet, having transcended both religion and the physical world, so little is understood about the spirits. The West assumed the djinn is a topic better left to Disney and popular culture, or at best to anthropologists. But djinn, who are part of Islam but not worshipped in it, with their free will and obscurity, have too much to teach us about a culture, a people, and their multiple religions to be forgotten. Okay, so what kind of beings are djinn? They're not inherently good or bad. They are amorphous entities able to take the shape of humans and animals alike. Their role in society, too, has been malleable. That's how you say that, right?
Yeah.
Djinn have served as a source of inspiration for both the most esteemed classical Arab poets in the first millennium and as The Genie and the Disney 1992 movie. Both before and after Islam's introduction, which included mentions of jinn in the Quran, jinn have remained an explicable entity.
You remember that picture I sent you recently?
What a
The guy dropped his towel, that video. That character is a jinn.
I don't remember.
From the American.
It sounds like I should remember.
I sent it in Snapchat.
Oh, come on.
The Snapchat video.
That's why I don't remember. It's so short-lived. I want to see it now, though.
I'll show you.
Pagan Arabs, big believers in the occult, worship jinn long before Islam was... Is it Islam or Islam? I've heard of both.
You're asking the wrong person. Okay.
Before Islam was introduced in the 7th century, believing that the spirits were masters of certain crafts and elements of nature who had the power to turn plots of land fertile. The jinn were believed to both interact with humans in our reality and lead their own lives in a separate realm. As spiritual entities, the jinn are considered dual-dimensional, with the ability to live and operate in both manifest and invisible domains. All right, and then it says, can jinn communicate with humans? They sure did in Disney's movie, Aladdin. Mm-hmm. Well, jinn influence has been widespread both religiously and culturally in pre- and post-Islamic Arabia. They can talk or otherwise communicate with people, though some, like poets, are more likely than others to be hit up by the jinn. In the early 7th century, when the Islamic prophet Muhammad began spreading the word of the Quran, he shared multiple surahs or verses that mentioned the jinn, including one named entirely after the spirits. Belief in jinn has been a part of the world's second largest religion ever since. One can't be Muslim. This one writer, El-Zin, argues that one can't be Muslim if he slash she slash they doesn't have faith in jinn's existence because they are mentioned in the Quran and the prophetic tradition. And while, of course, not all who identify as Muslim subscribe to the every word of the Quran, literally, if El-Zin is right, it means that around 1.6 billion people in the world believe in jinn. That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, whenever you said second largest, I was like, okay, that's going to be a lot of people. That's going to be a lot of people.
Despite stories of possession, jinn are remarkable in their propensity toward neither good or evil. In Christianity, demons and evil spirits appear as entities carrying out Satan's maleficent wishes, but neutral spirits like the jinn have no place. El-Zin believes that jinn have been robbed of the scholarly devotion they deserve, in part because they complicate the narrative of monotheism, what it means to believe in the existence of intelligent spiritual entities without necessarily demonizing them. Jinn, different than both angels and the devil, oscillate between good and evil, making them the more relatable. Oh, I like this article. It says they can fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
They can be pious. They can help us or they can hurt us. As shown in folk tales from 1001 Nights, commonly known in English as Arabian Nights.
Arabian Nights. Da, 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 da. That beginning song in Aladdin.
Oh, I know. I love it.
Da, da. I don't know the words.
Speaking of Aladdin, it says in one of these tales, the fisherman and the genie, the inspiration for Disney's Aladdin, a fisherman pulls a bottle out of the sea. When he opens it, a genie appears, angry to have been trapped in the bottle for centuries. The genie tells the fisherman their plan to kill him, but after the two exchange stories, the genie changes their mind, instead bestowing the fisherman with a life of good fortune.
Did you see that Tilda Swinton?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got it. I was like, if I bought a thing and Idris Elba popped out.
Whew, forget about it.
Right?
I'd be like, I'm good.
Best thrifting ever.
Right, you're sticking with me.
Well, to close it out, it's from Lisa.
Well, shocking.
Right? Whenever Dean is trying to break up with her, she said, yeah, well, the guy that basically just saved the world shows up at your doorstep. You expect him to have a couple of issues.
Yeah. Doesn't mean you're responsible for him, honey.
Cheers. Thank you for listening to Denim Wrapped Nightmares.
Follow us on Twitter or Instagram, leave a review, and let us know how we can get involved in the fandom.
This was fun, jerk.
It always is, bitch.